Dear Doctor, please see my patient. Ta. Hello and welcome to this week's Urgent Bite, brought to you by the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose, and today we're thinking about our referral letters to hospital. It's good practice to follow up on your referrals to hospital, not just to see how your patient is doing, but also to help calibrate your diagnostic radar and satisfy your professional curiosity for what was, possibly, an unknown diagnosis. This can cause mixed emotions, from sadness at learning of an unfavourable diagnosis or outcome, to potential embarrassment or professional shame for having referred something unnecessarily. It might be that you also get pride in having picked up something rare or difficult to diagnose. And you might feel happiness and relief at learning that your patient has made a full recovery and that you were part of that journey. But reflecting on your referrals is important, and indeed there is a referral audit which you can do for recertification. But when reflecting on referral outcomes, it is important to maintain quite a wide lens when it comes to outcomes and determining if your referral was accurate or necessary. For example, if you refer a woman to the hospital as a possible appendicitis, if they then have surgery for an ovarian torsion and return home recovered, then the outcome for your referral was still positive. While the diagnostic accuracy was wide of the mark, the need for the patient to be in hospital and have further tests and secondary care was correctly established. So on balance, it can still be viewed as an appropriate and successful referral. Acknowledging the diagnostic limitations in primary care, especially being earlier in the disease process, along with social and geographical considerations, a relative lack of background information, and then adding the secret sauce that comprises a mix of clinical experience and clinical gestalt, all means that getting a specific diagnosis correct in primary care is not an easy thing to do. The retrospectoscope might have you feeling down when you see the eventual diagnosis, but I think we would all agree that our diagnostic job would be a lot easier if we were to have some prolonged observation time and higher imaging, as well as umpteen years specialising in one specific area of medicine, rather than covering every area of medicine as we do. So while I often think about this aspect of the referral process when reviewing the outcomes of my referrals, I also take an interest in how my referral was considered by the receiving clinician. There are several things to wonder about. I ask myself, did they read what I wrote? Did they laugh at what I thought? Did they get a completely different history and think that I'm an idiot? Did they repeat a lot of what I'd already done, or even dismiss what I'd done? Did my workup help the patient journey at all? I often cringe at spelling mistakes I reread in retrospect, and my hackles always prickle when I read a note that says, referred in by GP. This is not a slight on my GP colleagues, but more a simple statement of fact. I'm not a GP, and reading this in the notes irritates me as it reflects the general misunderstanding that exists in the healthcare world, and wider world, about the differences between general practice and urgent care, and the grey fuzz that is often applied to make what is an obvious differentiation, to me at least, into an obfuscated, opaque melange of meh, which professionally irks me. While this might be indicative of an underlying ignorance, it might also be a sign that the referral note had not been read. Regarding the latter, I ask myself the question, do referrals get read, and do they impact secondary services at all? Now, I did not find a huge amount of literature on this topic, but three papers have made me think and draw some relevant urgent care reflections. So the first paper I found was a French paper from the journal Santé Publique. Thankfully, the abstract is translated into English on PubMed. It's by Chavot et al., and it's called Impact on Referral Letter on Triage Decisions in the Adult Patients Admitted to the Emergency Department. It was published in 2013. They performed a prospective 2-month study looking at referrals through an ED and their subsequent triage. They concluded that the referring letter had limited impact on the nurse's choice of triage level, except for patients for whom mentions of severity that had not been observed in triage meant that a more urgent triage level was applied. So this would suggest that if our referral letter highlights a significant concern, diagnosis or symptom, triage nurses will take this into account. This certainly tallies with my anecdotal experience. Leading on from this, a study in 2012 in the journal Teaching and Learning Medicine by Vandenberg et al. Called Accepting Diagnostic Suggestions by Residents, a Potential Cause for Diagnostic Error in Medicine, had a small sample size of 24 residents, but they looked to investigate a psychological tendency for people to tend towards accepting rather than refuting hypotheses. Their written, clinical-based study did find that suggested diagnoses may evoke confirmatory tendencies that lead to diagnostic errors. However, a more recent study from 2022 in the journal BMC Medical Education by Stahl et al. Called Does a Suggested Diagnosis in a GP's Referral Question Impact Diagnostic Reasoning? An experimental study. And they had 44 medical intern participants and again used clinical case-based referrals. They found that the diagnostic suggestion in the referral letter did not influence subsequent diagnostic accuracy. But they did find that where there was a diagnostic suggestion, the intern's diagnostic differential list was smaller. I would infer from that last part that the diagnosis, as suggested by the referrer, is helping to whittle down the differentials. But given the diagnostic outcome was not affected, this whittling at least was in the correct direction. Now, these studies are small, and certainly the last two found slightly different conclusions, but I have some urgent care reflections to share as a result of reading them. Firstly, it is vital that an urgent care referral letter is sent, by whatever means your system allows, to the admitting team, and that it is clear, polite, and easy to read. I think we need to be assuming that they are all read, and as a professional courtesy, we ensure that they're not a jumbled mix of spelling mistakes and shorthand. As shown by the nurse triage study, where we put vital, urgent information up front, it is likely to affect the outcome of the triage. So we need to be front-loading our referral letters with a headline, if you like, something to get the attention and make it crystal clear what our concern is. But while highlighting urgency, it is also probably wise that we keep our diagnostic certainty for things of which we are certain. So a mesial nerve fracture does exactly what it says on the tin, if we see one, but an abdominal pain with peritonism might be a number of possible diagnoses. So trying to make a more specific stab at that diagnosis might mean a subsequent referral goes up a cul-de-sac and misses out on potential differential diagnoses. So keeping the diagnosis vague in those situations, and perhaps including your entire differential list of considerations, will help keep that diagnostic uncertainty open for the patient's initial journey through the hospital system. Another reflection is for us to be reviewing our referrals regularly, as I said at the start, to help learn and hone our clinical radar. But it is important to not take things too personally when considering the outcomes. Remember our limitations and remember our priority to give our patients the best possible outcome. My final reflection is actually on differentials and how important they are for us in urgent care before we get to making a referral to hospital. If we have someone referred to urgent care by a GP or physio, or even from an overloaded ED, we must not allow ourselves to be guided down a diagnostic tunnel due to a prior diagnostic suggestion. This includes any suggestions from our own nurse in triage. Likewise, if a patient suggests a diagnosis, while important to hear them and consider their thoughts, the best way to ensure proper management and urgent care is to start with a nice wide differential list and then move them down the suspicion list or remove them once you're satisfied that they've been excluded, like a medical game of guess who. This process not only helps us avoid the diagnostic cul-de-sac, it also helps our brain find and remember diagnoses. What has not leapt out at you from the start can appear a while later while thinking of the differentials, so resisting diving in too early is often beneficial. I think it wise to have a working diagnosis and a long list of differentials, until the working diagnosis can be definitively locked in as a final diagnosis. Including our differential working list in our referrals might help our patient's journey through the hospital, especially if we flag the serious concerns up front for all to see. I'll link in the show notes to the papers I've mentioned. If anyone has any other suitable papers you think are relevant, please let me know via podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz. And we'll be back again next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then. But for now, thanks for listening.